Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome along to a special edition of the RTE GAA podcast. I'm Mikey Stafford and today I am joined by Mark Ingle, DCU Mercy coach, and Kieran Shannon, Irish Examiner columnist and basketball coach himself. The reason I have two basketball people on the RTE GAA podcast is because for the last few weeks you may have noticed that every time we talked about anything, Pat Spillane, Sean Kavanagh, whoever it was, would bring up The Last Dance. The Last Dance is, of course, the ESPN documentary that's been shown on Netflix about Michael Jordan's career and specifically his last season with the Bulls. The show's been a cultural phenomenon. It's crossed sporting boundaries. My wife watched it, loved it. I know lots of people with very little interest in sport, never mind basketball, who've watched it. So I just wanted to kind of dive in a little bit to what makes Michael Jordan still such a figure that transcends sport and why he's so popular with elite sports people, including so many of our GAA stars. And we're going to look at the history of basketball and the GAA in Ireland and explore a little bit what Gaelic football has learned from basketball as a sport and what individual players are still learning from basketball as a sport. So, lads, I'm delighted to have you with us. How are you getting on today?
Yeah, we're good. Mikey, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, good. Right. Now, before we get going, we've obviously been picking our Sunday game, the All-Star teams of the Sunday game era, so it would be remiss of me not to finish this out and just share the teams as the voting finished with everybody. For those of you listening and not watching, we've Stephen Cookson in goal, Mark O'Shea, Seamus Moynihan, Paddy O'Shea, full backline, Tomas O'Shea, Lee Keegan, Jack McCaffrey, and then we have Brian Fenton and Jack O'Shea in midfield, Peter Canavan, Dermot Connolly, Pat Spillane in the half forward line, and the full forward line, which is the last line to be voted on, is Morris Fitzgerald, Michael Murphy, and Colm Cooper. And now, quickly show you the hurling team. And we have Brendan Cummins in goal, Brian Corcoran, Brian Lowen, Dermot O'Sullivan in the full back line, Tommy Walsh, Padraig Maher, Brian Whelihan in the half back line, Tommy Dunn, Michael Fenley midfield, DJ Carey, Joe Canning, Henry Shefflin in the half forward line, Owen Kelly, Seamus Callanan, and Nicky English in the full forward line. Kieran, you're obviously also a proud and much read GAA columnist. Just get your thoughts on those teams. I don't know whether you've been following this or not, but we've been hung from many a rafter for not picking JJ Delaney, even though I must stress it was a public vote. So beyond that, just wondering, have you any thoughts on those teams?
Yeah, I mean, I just see the football team in front of me. God, it's a fine team. Like, I suppose you're just trying to rack the brain now. Just this is my first time seeing it as to who's left out. You're looking like Lee Keegan is a phenomenon, you know. Tomas and himself have taken, and Jack, like, that is an incredible half back line. So much so that Paddy was obviously accommodated in the corner.
He was voted in there before he had a chance. He was voted into cornerback before he could be put in his strongest position.
Yeah, like I know he did play minutes in the corner. He played a few games at corner, so it's not a stretch. But I mean, I suppose when I'm looking at that, is the I'm looking at the Ulster teams now. The Greg Blaney's at number 11. Like Dermo has been obviously a sensational player in many ways, but I do think that's the one that jumps out at me. That there's other players there's so many other players that I suppose would have had greater longevity or in and out. Dermot, like, even is there a case that Kieran Kilkenny would be ahead of Dermot? You know, yeah. I mean, I'd have to. I'm just trying to go through. Like, that is pretty much dominated too from outside of that Kerry team from the 2000. Like, Larry Tompkins should be centre forward.
Yeah,
that's the one.
That's a case for Trevor Giles myself. But yes, yeah. I know what you mean.
No, but Tompkins, like, we're about to talk about basketball. Tompkins was the LeBron James for 5 years. Like, he was the best player on the field. Sometimes, you know, you'll watch a Dublin Kerry game and would you necessarily be able to say who the best player is, the way that we were just talking about earlier in basketball, where you can obviously see LeBron James is the best player on the court. Like, Larry Tompkins, whenever he played in that era, was by far the best player. You know, even though he was going up against those great Meade teams, like the 88 drawn All-Ireland. I don't know if I've ever seen beyond Morris's 97 All-Ireland, a final being the Larry Tompkins final or the 97 All-Ireland is known as. So Tompkins for Connolly is the one that jumps out. But look, you're never going to please everyone. You know,
certainly not.
That's a team still, and Dermot is an exceptional footballer, but Tompkins to me would have to be on that team.
Grand. Well,
and that's not just because I'm from Cork.
Oh, yeah. Well, we all...
even from Cork.
There's recency bias in this thing, but there's also regional bias. We've accepted that as well. Mark, I was going to ask you all this cold, but I did warn you I was going to ask you. As soon as we're launching into a bit of a basketball chat here, would you be able to give me your all-time NBA starting five?
Yeah, I think it's a bit like the GAA All-Stars. I mean, Dermot Connolly is probably the best footballer there's ever been, regardless of longevity, you know, how long they're in the game or what they've done. And picking an NBA five is a bit like that. You know, if you go right back to the start of basketball, you know, the first people we would have remembered, so Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, you know, Bill Russell, these guys. And then you come through the Michael Jordan era. And then you go on to the LeBron era. And now really we're in the end of the LeBron era, this, you know, probably the start of Steph Curry's era. But I just, you know, again, David Hickey was had an article out there the other day, and he was talking about the Dubs, and he predicted that the Dubs would win five in a row. And then he said, with the COVID-19 and the lockdown and probably a break for a year, that they'd probably go on to win another five in a row. So I think when you're coming to NBA teams, I would just go my favourites. My favourite in the five position would probably be Shaq. You know, I just think he was the most dominant for, you know, 3 or 4 years, certainly when he was with the Lakers. And then, he went up to Miami and won a championship. And I think the best player, and it's a bit like that for me, even this year, I thought our player, Meredith Burkall, was probably player of the year, but they went for a Glanmire player. And this was a vote by the coaches. And I can see why they go for flamboyancy rather than from what you actually win. I think in America, you have to win championships to be considered an MVP, you know, and probably why, you know, we're talking about Michael Jordan's greatness, you know, when he's won 6 championships. Would we be talking about the greatest player if he hadn't won championships? Like, I'll give you a good one to think about for the GAA pod. Would Dermot Connolly be brought back last year if he wasn't Dermot Connolly? You know, if he was a guy that just maybe gets into the team. Yeah. Or does he come back because he's great? You know, so all those type of things. So I'd go with Shaq in the five. And in the power forwards lot, I'd go with Keem Olajuwon. I actually loved him. I use videos of him the whole time to show my players because his footwork is exceptional. And believe it or not, he actually started out playing soccer. You know, I was a big soccer man as well. So, you know, when you actually watch his footwork and he explains his videos, you know, I show them to young players all the time.
You know, he came to basketball very late, Olajuwon.
He did. But probably because he was, exactly. You know, again, this argument of playing a lot of sports and then specialise a bit later, you know.
Yeah.
Then in the three spot, that's probably the most difficult one to come up with. You know, like you're going on types of players. You know, would Scottie Pippen get in? Maybe. You know, Charles Barkley in the three spot, who nearly came to Ireland, actually. Nearly played for Colchester, Charles Barkley, believe it or not. Yeah.
What's the story there? Well, go on, I haven't heard that one.
Well, the story was that Aidan Molloy went out to recruit some players, saw him playing. And they were playing in kind of a summer league. And he needed 20 pounds extra from his committee to get Barkley to come over. And they said it was too much money at the time.
Oh, God.
I mean there's a lot of apocryphal stories now about Irish basketball back in the day.
As you know, I was Colchester back in the day.
Yeah, but that's summer of 84. But, you know, that was, like, I mean, he was... he tried out for the US Olympic team in 84, didn't actually make it.
It would have been before that, yeah.
So
he didn't make it because Bobby Knight didn't want him.
Yeah, exactly.
End of story.
But he still was it, he still went fifth in that draft, you know. So and Celesto ended up with that summer, they ended up with Kelvin Troy. That was where they met Kelvin, and that who ended up being a legend. And yeah, so that's interesting. So you have so who you've got Barkley as your three, have you?
I'd probably go with Barkley in the
okay,
three.
This is your favourites, right?
And I'd go with Michael Jordan in the two.
Uh-huh.
And I'd go with Steph Curry in the one.
Right.
Okay. So no LeBron.
Yeah. No, not the moment. Maybe LeBron in the three.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to squeeze them all in, but yeah, you'd go LeBron in the three. So LeBron before Barkley, then Jordan, then Steph Curry. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty good team. I mean, Mark's talking there, like, because there is a difference between better and greater, you know, like the game has evolved, you know. So like Bob Cousy is a top 50 NBA player ever, but would he even cut it in the Irish Super League now if you were to transport him from then to now?
Yeah.
It's completely evolution. So Steph Curry he's the greatest outside shooter the sport has ever known. So like if you were picking a team for today, Steph Curry being fit would be on your team. Is he among the top five greatest players ever? Not necessarily. I mean, yeah, like I would have obviously Jordan, LeBron, and it's, you see, when people are picking these fantastical teams, you know, like Russell is favored ahead of Wilt because, going back to what Mark said, he won more championships. Wilt only won the two, but I mean, if you're surrounded by Michael Jordan and LeBron James, I think we can make Wilt work. And he was the 20th century version of Shaq, or, well, Shaq played the 90s.
Yeah, 100 points in a couple of games, didn't he?
Yeah, so just a phenomenon. So, like, Shaq was Wilt 2.0, like, but Wilt was the original. So, you know, even more than Kareem or Russell, even though they might be greater, I think, in this team, Wilt just is a fascinating figure. Look, I'm a Kobe fan, you know. I would find him there some way. Don't know if he's necessarily in the top five of greatest of all time, but he's in the top 10. I would have to take him. And then either a Steph or a Larry Bird for some of the shooting, you know. But, I mean, there's great fun with that. And, you know, what's interesting about the basketball is, like, it's very heated, that whole GOAT conversation. Mm. And the ranking, you know, is Kobe seventh, or, you know, is he 12th, you know? But there's nearly a uniformity about the top 12.
I love how American media, they make it sound scientific when they do their rankings. And really, like us, it's all just subjective. But the language they use and the definite way in which they talk about this thing, they make you think, that, you know, like as if it's a scientific equation, when really it's just sports fans, you know, you know, kicking the ball around.
There was one game there. I watched a game a few weeks ago, which was the US Olympic team against Argentina. Just to give you an idea, I think Kobe probably, for me, is not in my consciousness because they were on the West Coast and we didn't see an awful lot of the games, you know, or it was too late at night, or, you know, where you tended to see more Chicago and Boston just because of the time difference. But in that game, the Argentinian coach had to play a box on one on Kobe. Now, they had LeBron. He had, like, serious NBA team. Dwight Howard, you know, absolutely top-notch players. But if you didn't know them and you were just watching 10 black guys going up and down, Kobe stood out by a mile from my eye just watching him as a coach.
Yeah.
And when they went into the box on one, he still caused fits for the Argentinian team. And that was an Argentinian team that got to the semi-finals of the...
And had beaten the Americans before, had won the World
Championships. Yeah, I think of the World Championships, they'd beaten them, hadn't they?
Yeah.
I can't remember your man's guy now. He was an NBA player playing at the four spot for him with the long
hair. Manu Ginobili, is it?
No, he was in the two. He was injured for that game. Right. Got the long hair, do you know?
Is that Scola?
Yeah.
Louis Scola.
Scola had 36 in the game. Wow. And Kobe with a box on one had 34.
Wow.
You know, it's interesting. He just looked on a different level, you know?
It's interesting you say that, because in 2008, I think that's probably either, I'd say that's to the 2008 Olympics. And Bill Simmons, who's more than anybody into this ranking, he wrote literally on the book of basketball is about the various pyramids. And what he made that point, okay, LeBron was pre-championships at this point, but he was like, I think, well, Kobe won the MVP in 08, was beaten by the Celtics that year in the finals. But he makes the point that you had LeBron, and Mark's point, he had all this talent, Howard at the five, but that when they were up against it, against the Spanish in the final, who had the Gasol brothers in particular, he said, never has the argument about who's the best player on the planet ever been just done rather than in a bar or whatever, but on the court. They got it to LeBron. Or sorry, they got it to Kobe. When the pressure was on and the Spanish were back in 2 points, it was to Kobe, or Kobe took it over and made the plays.
Yeah.
It was the best way of solving who was the best at the time. It was obviously Kobe, because that's who they deferred to.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So before Kobe and before LeBron, we had Michael Jordan, obviously. And as I said at the intro, everybody who's going to watch The Last Stand has probably seen it by now. And a lot of people have probably watched it twice. And we're going to, you know, we can park our concerns about editorial, you know, oversight here or whatever, because obviously Scottie Pippen's had to speak, Howard's had to speak, a few of the lads have had had something to say about it. But one of the things that's come up, and I know you wrote about this, Kieran, is there's a lot of debate about Jordan's will to win and whether it would be acceptable in a dressing room these days. Miguel Delaney in The Independent said Keane is probably the last player who kind of had the same kind of aura about him, and it's interesting, but Michael Jordan wasn't loved and isn't still loved because he was a bit of an asshole in the dressing room. People knew he had a will to win, but what they saw, I suppose, was kind of, you know, game six against Utah, you know, they saw him playing injured, they saw him, you know, they saw his determination to never phone a game in or whatever. Like, is that the main reason that people still love him, or is it simply and purely because he was by far and away the best person at a game that was skyrocketing into global consciousness at the time?
Yeah. Look, he was the package, you know. Like Mark made the point there earlier about you need championships to have a certain standing. And in terms of, let's say, being ranked among the greats, that's true. But Jordan, let's say, it took Jordan his seventh year to win a championship. But by year two, by the first year, it was obvious. Like even it was touched on The Last Dance about their sales, where that in they were hoping by year three or year four of the Jordan contract that they might have sold 4 million worth of Nike Air Jordan boots, and they had 126 million in his rookie year. So what he was more, first of all, just as a spectacle. That's where his initial appeal, because the Bulls weren't winning championships. They just about scraped into the playoffs his first three seasons. That it was, he was the next, we were talking about Shaq being the 2.0 of Will Chamberlain. He was Dr. J to the next level, because Dr. J did bring the aerial game into the NBA. And Jordan, when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, referenced an NC State player from, you know, his native state, which is David Thompson. So Jordan just took, you know, he took kind of like what James Brown was to Michael Jackson and Prince, boom, the next level. He just brought it to the next level, along with he had an outside game. He sank the college winning shot against Georgetown. So he was just an all round game. But he was actually seen, and it's touched on in The Last Dance, before he won against the Lakers and had to go through Detroit. It was really aggravating. Like, I remember when I was playing basketball and I was a Jordan man, I loved Dominique Wilkins, that spectacular type of player. And I remember within our own club, some of our coaches were saying, but he's not a winner like Magic and Larry. Like, he doesn't make other players better. And, you know, whereas he did, he made a Scottie Pippen better. And then when he made the breakthrough, and he was so determined to make that breakthrough, and he was actually very he could be an a-hole, but he wasn't an a-hole. He was very charming and charismatic, both within the dressing room and outside it, and he was very eloquent in discussing high performance. Like, I mean, he was cited so often And you know, his
it's a very underrated skill in a sports person for making them accessible. Like Wayne Rooney gets pilloried because people think he's a bit of an idiot or whatever. He's not very clever. If you hear Wayne Rooney talking about football, you realize this guy actually understands the game and is communicating it.
His columns now are very good. And Jordan was like that straight out of the gate and very eloquent about high performance, about, you know, the mindset he'd get into. Like, you'd often hear, like we're talking about, obviously, it's linked with Jay. Like, McGeaney is someone straight off, and, you know, McGeaney was often compared to Keane, vice versa, in that late 90s, early noughties era. And, like, the famous one, like I remember interviewing Martin McHugh, or I was doing a profile on Kieran. I interviewed Kieran, but I was making calls around it. And I remember talking to Martin McHugh, and he said, like, he remembers meeting Kieran McGeaney, you know, in the mid-90s, before our man made the breakthrough, and look, what do I need to get better at my game, right? And that was the famous thing about Michael Jordan. What do I do this year? I'm the best, but how do I get better? So, you know, he evolved, like Mark will be able to go through this more, but, you know, like you even talk, like Mark's right. I mean, and that's why I love LeBron and Kobe. Mark has talked about the video of, you know, breaking down footage of Olajuwon's video. Like LeBron, after he got beaten by Dallas in 2011, realized I have to go and develop more of a post game. I didn't have enough game changing plays, is how he worked, how he phrased it. Jordan was the first to really articulate that importance of always getting better. Kaizen, like always getting better, and so he popularized that along as well as doing it. Like, and that was the thing. He talks about how, you know, he actually preferred the second three-peat version of himself because cerebrally he didn't have the same hops that he had in the first three-peat, but he had worked it out. So he had that reflective practice. Would you agree, Mark? Like, what? How did you?
Well, actually, yeah, you're bang on. The interesting thing for me is when, you know, watching The Last Dance, you know, because obviously, being a basketball person, you'll have known people who've come in contact with Michael Jordan. You know, there was a couple, like Tim McCarthy spoke about him, meeting him at the Ryder Cup, you know, and that Jordan was, you know, high-fiving him every day and all that type of stuff. Yeah, but, you know, Timmy, you were wearing a mic and he knew you were in the media. Mm-hmm. You know, Jordan doesn't do any, I would imagine, doesn't do anything without having a reason for it. Mm-hmm. There was a reason for The Last Dance. His brand, his shoes, you know, Jumpman relaunched their brand 2 days after The Last Dance finished, you know. So I think if you're watching that, expecting them to be popular, unpopular, what was he like in the dressing room? It doesn't really matter. You know, like this is a pro basketball player, the best player in the world at his craft, right? And I think everybody expected him because his image was so carefully cultivated, you know, that... You know, who else is going to do a Space Jam? Like, you couldn't see LeBron doing a Space Jam.
Well, he is doing a Space Jam, you know that.
Is he? Go on, yeah. Can only imagine.
He's doing Space Jam too, yeah.
Like, at least Shaq doing it. Shaq has the personality for it, you know what I mean? Mm. But, like, there's even a book there that I've read there, The Last Season. It's Phil Jackson's book on Kobe and Shaq the last year. And they were fighting like kids. You know, and then I watched the documentary 2 weeks ago. They're interviewing each other and they're like the best of mates. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just think with top sports people, I just look at them as the sports person. I don't really care about their personality. I don't care what they do really off the court. You know, would you like to go into battle for any game in any, you know, with Michael Jordan? Absolutely.
That was the premise of Space Jam. If you had somebody to save, one person to save the world.
Yeah, absolutely. But to get back to a bit more technical, you know, Michael Jordan taught Kobe all his moves. Kobe copied Michael. Scottie Pippen copied Michael. If you watch a screen of the three of them, you wouldn't be able to tell them apart from the size differences. But they actually have all the same moves. This is what you do here when you're against this guy. This is how you get him up in the air. This is how you get under him. You know, this is how you spin away from them. And Kieran was right. For the second three-peat, when he was losing his legs a bit, you know, because I come to The Last Dance having read everything, like the Bucks, you know, playing for keeps when nothing else matters, you know, Michael Jordan books. So I've read them all, the Jordan Rules, which doesn't paint Jordan in a nice way at all. But again, is it about will he do anything? And one of the things he did was part of the triangle offense, which is well spoken about in The Last Dance, that Tex Winter brought to the party. And I'll speak a bit later about that, because I use that with my team, certainly with the Colester team, you know, with Adrian Fulton, John Leahy, Eric Jackson.
2001 and, team that won everything.
Yeah, but with a lot of good players. So you needed an offense that, more or less equal. It's supposed to be equal opportunity.
But you got Jordan, it's not going to be equal.
It's not going to be equal when Michael gets the ball. But the point is, they ran him into the mid post, right? Which, for basketball people, the mid post in the triangle offense is about two steps higher than where traditionally, say, Shaq would play. And you're going, how does that make a difference? That makes a huge difference, because it opens up the baseline and it opens up passing options and it opens up a skip pass to the other side of the court. But anyway, the point about Michael Jordan was, and he spoke about it in one of the books, that he knew that to win the championship, because his legs were not going, but they weren't there for 82 games plus the playoffs, 120 something games for the season. So he built up his upper body, his chest, his arms. And when he got into the mid post in the triangle, he had a two dribble move, 1-2 to the middle, and he'd take a fadeaway shot. But it was unstoppable. He had an unstoppable shot. And himself and Tiger spoke about this, because Tiger then said, to win the Masters, now you have to be able to hit a draw on, I think it's the 14th or the 15th hole. The competition,
I think, isn't it?
One of them anyway. He had to. You have to be able to hit a draw, and that wasn't Tiger's
natural shot. Yeah.
But he learned over 1 year to hit this one shot to win that tournament, and Jordan was the same. Jordan said, "Well, to win now that my legs aren't there, I've got to get into this post position more," and he uses upper body to create separation. Create the separation and make the shot. Yeah. And from my experience of coming up, you know, coaching great players, that's what they want to do. They want that one detail. Like the Gaelic players, like, come on, give me the one thing that's going to make a difference. Yeah. Give it to me. Come on. That's what they want of you.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Well, you've used the word Gaelic there. And if we don't move on to Gaelic football and basketball, I have to change the name of this podcast, because I know the two of you could just talk basketball all day and I could listen to you all day. This is the RTEGA podcast. So I do want to just move into the history of basketball and GAA a little. We all know the players who've made the crossover, you know, Lee McHale, Michael Darvicol, Michael Quirk, Jason Sherlock, Kieran Donaghy. A lot of them have gone on to be quite good coaches, which is something that's interesting to talk about. But Kieran, you were informing me yesterday that it goes back way further and it's way more ingrained than that. Bernard Brogan Sr. played at a high level as a schoolboy, didn't he? And then I was reading today, like down in Kerry, that great Kerry team, Mick O'Dwyer, Bomber, Rishi Fogarty, Pat O'Shea, these guys all played basketball. So it's how much of basketball, maybe in its early days in Ireland, how much was it a winter indoor sport for GAA players? Is that a fair description of early days?
Yeah, so they both have had an influence on each other. Like, obviously, the GAA was here in 1884. There was football had been played in various versions. Basketball came here in the army. It came into Ireland in the mid-20s, 1920s, that is. And it was played in the army, and it was a pretty robust version. It would have been a Gaelic football version. Guys were stretched out of there and everything. And but the first club that was actually formed in Ireland would have been the UCD club, along with Neptune the following year. It was the army game initially, but two hugely influential people in the foundation of Irish of the association in the country, along with the playing of the game, would have been Father Joe Horan and Harry Boland, the nephew of Harry Boland, who would have been in the first Doyle. And they came from the UCD JA club, so they were sportsmen. And Father Horan had played the game in when he was studying in Italy. And as he said, he had the international game in mind, while there was the Irish version where they had murder in their heart. So he were more Gaelic football, rugby. And but Harry Boland was hugely impressed. There was an exhibition game among the American, because the American influence is huge in this. Like, you know, like Mark and myself know each other well, and we would have talked about how, you know, how he kind of comes from a soccer background, but going to see the Kelvin Tries play in the '80s, and that is what captured my imagination in the '80s. What captured the Harry Boland's imagination in the late '20s was seeing an exhibition game among US military, the naval base had an exhibition game, and the Air Force had an exhibition game in the Cahalbrua barracks now. And it was absolutely amazed by the discipline of the sport, the movement of the sport. So there's been that tradition. And, you know, Mark and Jason, the work that they did with Jim's team is taking it to its natural evolution. But, you know, within even Dublin JA, as I mentioned, it started there in the late 20s too. Kevin Heffernan has spoke before about being a student in Trinity, and they were playing this college team up in Galway, and there were all these old fellas, and he just said, like, we're going to run these guys off the field or the court, like, this isn't going to be a problem. But they were American, they were medical students or whatever, I don't know if they were mature students or whatever, and he said they just absolutely with their smarts outclassed us. And he said that was a huge influence on him. And like, even Mickey Hart would talk about, you know, there was a lot of talk about how, you know, they didn't play the conventional 15 boxes on the field. But he would often talk about, let's say, the Doher role or whatever. He said, like, Bobby Doyle was doing that. Heffernan was doing it himself in the mid-50s. So Heffernan would have, and you mentioned it there then, like, would Bernard Brogan Sr. would have played in St. Eklund's, was an Irish basketball international underage. That there would be a tradition of playing all the sports, but you would have in Dublin, yeah, of tapping into the game's awareness, because that Dublin team, it wasn't necessarily that they had the best players. They were a veteran team. Heffernan inherited a lot of players in their late 20s that had been used to being knocked out in the first round at Leinster. And how did they transform the game? They thought about the game differently, as well as preparation. And the way the likes of Hannah Ho, they were actually creating mismatches and space inside. They were way ahead of the game that way. And then, as you said, like in Kerry were the counterpoint to that in the mid-70s. And I remember, like, interviewing Mick O'Dwyer for a piece in 2010, that he was going into his seventh decade in football. And he talked about the basketball influence from him even playing in Waterville. But he talked about the link that the likes of Mikey Sheehy and Liston had, their little flick-offs, their movement. A lot of that was because they played basketball in school. Like the likes of John O'Keefe, like, you know, this might be even news to Mark, like that, like just in like the first league with Americans and you know, the 79-80 season, Austin Stacks, Kieran Donaghy's club, had a national league team. You know, the likes of John O'Keefe would have played nationally. And you see, the JA has had a huge influence on basketball, particularly administratively, because it used to be work on a county board model, and you actually would have had, let's say, Cork and Kerry in the Procol Hall. Paddy O'Connor would have been playing against Tom Wilkinson and Tim McCarthy in the 70s. It was on that model, but they felt the club was a better way to promote the league, etc. But both would have influenced hugely, and the likes of Ger Power and John O'Keefe would have played for Kerry in basketball as well. The Johnny Cullities from the 50s. So there's been always this tradition. And Sean Walsh and the Bomber in particular would always have talked about how basketball. I remember reading a book in 1979-80 and an interview with Sean Walsh, and they were saying one advice for a young fella, you know, who wanted to be a Gaelic footballer, and he said, play basketball in the winter.
Yeah. You, Mark, obviously have Leicester powerhouse. You set up your own club then, pretty much based in Coolock originally. This is the, you know, this is Dublin GAA heartland. So I'm interested to know how that work. Does that work for you? Did it work against you? Or were you just operating in your own sphere and you just forgot about the GAA entirely? What was your thinking on it?
No, I love, I think Gaelic football is a great sport to watch. I've always watched it. You know, back to the teams with Heffel, you know, mostly my friends were GAA men. I wasn't really a GAA, I was more a soccer guy. But it was great to go watch the clubs after you played your match in the morning and you go to the All-Ireland semi-final or the final, whatever the case may be. That kind of sparked my interest in it. I think that Kerry team and the Dublin team of that era, you know, played a beautiful brand of Gaelic football. You know, obviously they say now that the hand pass, and then, you know,
that was thrown at them, wasn't it, Mark? It was that was what was thrown at them. They're playing bloody basketball.
Yeah. Well, it was thrown at me actually during the run for the five in the row. That a friend of mine brought me to one of the games, and he's a corporate boxer. We're sitting up there, and he goes, "This is bloody basketball." And I said, "Thanks very much." You know, but that's what it was. They had a product where the hand, and then they wanted to ban it. Like, I thought it was a lightning fast game. And then they said there probably wasn't enough kicking involved. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like, even nowadays, you know, like the Dubs kick the ball. You know, they certainly hand pass the ball. They might be the best at, you know, keeping possession and doing that stuff when they have to. But, you know, they play a lovely brand of football.
When you have the ball as much as Dublin have the ball, you're going to have to move it in a variety of different ways anyway.
Because the teams are so smart nowadays with their game plans and video and statistics. And, you know, like I've seen statistics that, you know, just piled on a desk kind of going, how's this going to make any difference? You know, he had 27 possessions. Kieran Kilkenny had 37 possessions. Yeah. You know, what did he do with the possessions? You know, there's statistics and what you can actually get out of statistics. You know, like my point guard in basketball, you know, has 8 turnovers and you're going, oh my God. But then she may have had the ball in her hands 137 times. So 8 turnovers ain't that bad. You know, or are the turnovers aggressive turnovers? Are they trying to make something happen? You know, I was at a session there a few years ago with an unnamed club doing a session for them, and one of the players tried a pass, you know, that was like 55 yards maybe. And I thought it was a brilliant attempt, but it gave away possession because it didn't get there. You know, but the coach wasn't too happy that they even attempted the pass. Now, I don't think you can take that, you know. Like, how many shots did Michael Jordan make? How many did he miss? There wasn't too many misses on the documentary.
No.
You know, one or two, you know.
No, there is that with stats can be... And Mark's right, like about the... Like, I remember being in one setup, and I remember one of the creative players saying, like, he hated the stats coming along where it might have... He was a foot passer, right? And he might have had 8 out of 11 passes completed, but 2 of them were foot passes that set up a goal and a point. And, you know, then the guy who did the 5 safe hand passes gets 100% complete rate, right? Right, yeah. That's nearly another argument, but it's interesting with the... Because, you know, as I said, the end game nearly in this, although it's going to continuously evolve, let's say, is the work that Jason and Mark would have done as basketball men with the Dubs. But it was nearly a counterpoint to, I suppose, what was going on in Ulster. So, like, even on the stats, like, I remember when Armagh famously made their breakthrough in 2002, their statsman was Darren O'Neill, who Mark would be familiar with, you know, would have coached a lot of National League basketball. And he was the stats man, and they were, you know, like coming from a psychology background, you know, it's not just go out and win the game. And there's the famous Joe Kernan halftime speech. But, you know, the other thing that they identified was that they were losing the breaking ball count for the first time. And that was part of their identity. And, right, how do we get back? We're 4 down against Kerry. Well, let's start going back to what we do, which is, you know, the process, which is winning the breaking ball. And, you know, someone like Darren, and I remember when I was doing that, although it was more on the statistical end, I remember him saying he had a basketball, it goes back to what Mark was saying, even about the box and one on Kobe. He said, like, their mindset was, whatever they have, take it away. So, like, in other words, make other people like, you know, make their lesser guns, make the John Paxsons maybe be the ones that take the shot, or let BJ Armstrong try to go for 20. We're going to hold Martin, you know, Scotty here or whatever. And the natural evolution then throughout the noughties, okay, Kerry, who were coached by Pat O'Shea, another basketball international. And I remember Donaghy talking about them, you know, doing some inbound players that came from basketball. But Jim McGuinness was hugely influenced by basketball, and he actually has touched on this before. And what he recognized was, and I remember when I was playing, I played Gaelic street leagues in Douglas. And when I went over to the basketball, I remember, like, we were playing full court press, but we were playing full court press all the time. And I remember him saying, they can't score from there. Like, you know, like, I remember this notion of, you know, because people just follow the ball. And it was like, we conserve our energy, come back inside the 3-point line and play defense more here. And that's what McGuinness nearly did was, he said, like, they can't score from there. This is where they score from, but we're going to have so many bodies back here. They set up. So he transformed the game from being a traditional man-to-man game, although there was, with that Armagh team, were playing double sweepers, etc. He took it to, they were playing quadruple sweepers, right? Dublin just about got past them in 2011, didn't get past them in 2014, which is where the Jim responded by going to the likes of Jason and Mark. But a lot of that was informed by the basketball experience. You know, he brought the mass, basically big zone defense into Gaelic football.
So, and yet, just like, I don't know, from the scene, maybe just looking at teams, more teams copy Jim McGuinness's style of football rather than Jim Gavin's style of football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the team that won 5 in a row, let's not forget that now.
The pendulum might be swinging a little bit now, but...
Well, you know, it was traditionally a man-to-man game, and as Kieran said, he brought in, you know, he was the one to popularise the zone defence. I think Mickey Hart been using it for years, hasn't he?
Well, true, but as I said, he just did the 2.0 version of it. He just did the next level with it.
So, Mark, that's where you kind of come into the GAA story, I suppose, is Jim Gavin approached you, and I actually read Kieran's interview with yourself from a couple of years ago, and Jim Gavin, you know, would text you and say he's watching a college basketball game. So he didn't need you to tell him about the basics of basketball, I'm assuming. It seems he was already somewhat of a fan. Is that fair to say?
I think he's a fan of all sports. I'd say his main sport would be American football.
Right.
You know, just from the amount he spoke about it, you know, if we were doing a coaching session, you know, he obviously had Jason there to, you know, if I came in with an idea, it'd be very hard to sell that to 35 Gaelic players.
Yeah.
You know, Jason's played basketball and Gaelic football, you know, at high level. Yeah, soccer at a high level, League of Ireland. And, you know, maybe most of his basketball was at junior level because he'd moved to the Gaelic and the soccer, but he certainly played Gaelic at a high level, you know. So he would, yeah, that will work or that won't work, you know, or Jim would make his own mind up, you know. Yeah. And it's a bit like anything. You can only go in and add ideas. I mean, you could ask maybe half the dubs might say, oh, yeah, Mark Ingle, yeah, had a bit of an influence there, all right. They mightn't even have known where the influence was coming from.
Yeah.
You know? And sorry about that.
No worries.
And, but again, some players are going to take that on board, some are not. You know, maybe half of them say, yeah, there was a great influence there. Mm-hmm. You know, we certainly got that idea from that, you know?
Yeah, the one thing I think that was quite noticeable for a couple of years with Dublin was how much in attack, they tried to stretch the field. They would have one, two players, like, with whitewash on their boots all the time. Like, they would, when they're going forward, they would completely stretch the field. I'm wondering, that to me looked like a basketball tactic. Is that fair?
The whitewashing on the boots?
Well, like, just
I'm only messing. Yeah.
Stretching the field as much as possible.
I think that all the detail will be for Kieran's next book after he's finished. but look, Jim McGuinness, because he was the one to popularise, and they won their All-Ireland Donegal, right? And there's lots of different reasons they won that particular year, right? But he condensed the pitch. So it would only make sense, you know, to stretch the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, to stretch the pitch. But when you stretch the pitch, you've got to know, you know, you've got to be able to, you know, have support play. You've got to be able to move into the right areas. You know, if you get into an area where you've got two or three guys, you know, swinging out of you, are you able to get out of that area? What's your plan? You know, I think if you wanted sort of, you know, justification or of a way of playing, if you remember Kevin McManaman's goal when Dublin kept possession, come late on to the game and they switched to play. It was against Kerry, I think, was it?
No, yeah. Sorry, they switched to play, is it? For the goal, was it?
Kevin McManaman ran down, buried the ball in the net.
No, that was against Mayo, I think, in the replay.
Maybe Mayo, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Remember that, Kieran, yeah? Yeah?
But yeah. You know, and it's basketball has brought more, like, adjacent, brought more than just the tactical element from basketball.
Yeah, there's skills involved.
Skills, and there's just the actual methodology of coaching. Mm. So, like, we talked about
Donahue. Warm-up drills, for instance, yeah?
Because a huge, like, Donahue, in the book that I would have done with him, he talked about at one stage in Kerry a frustration he had, let's say, when they lost the Down in 2010. He felt like they were panicking when they were in a scenario like of being 6 down and they were going for the goal too early. And he said, like, we haven't planned for this. When we have training games, it's just 0-0. Like, whereas, and he talked about, like, when he was under 15 as an Irish underage basketball international, working with Dave Fitzsimons and Joey Boylan, and where they would have gone through scenarios, right, lads, we're 6 down with 4 to go, right? Are we pressing here? Are we going for the 3-pointer? And they would have done it, brought in, asked questions. Well, what way do we do it? They scenario planning, you know? And like, that's one thing. Jason was coached by Joey. And like, it's one thing that I feel has been underestimated in Dublin. And there's a lot of talk about, oh, the when, you know, about the funding of coaching. And that's a whole other argument to a point. But where I think has been completely underestimated is just their sessions are more demanding mentally of the players. They are challenged more. They replicate pressure because they practice for scenarios. And I don't know if other teams, like Donahue was talking about, and he won All-Irelands with Kerry with very good coaches, but where they weren't practicing for a scenario of being 6 down. Whereas that team, like Dublin recognized from the Donegal game, because they were 5 up at one point in that game. Like, wait a second, we're not the ones that need to score here. They're the ones who have to come out. So, like, you had the situation in the first round of Super 8 games in 2018, where, if you remember, it had been a lively, good game. But after Niall Scully got the second goal, I think Dublin were up to about 6 or 7 up, and they kept ball. And, you know, I do think people like Mark and Jason, basketball, because it's an international sport, and the Americans can be a very progressive people, they have formulated rules so that they have a shot clock. We don't have a shot clock in Gaelic. So therefore, Dublin can run the ball for 3 minutes and then the other team switches off. Then a Brian Fenton can go through and kick a point to make it 6 or 7 up. But they recognised the possibilities, and also, you know, like Jason has spoken about this. I remember when his book came out at the end of 2017, it was just in the aftermath of the third All-Ireland, where they beat Mayo, and there was the famous, after Dean got the point, where they, en masse, 3 or 4 of the forwards brought guys to ground. Like, there isn't a team foul, intentional foul rule, where the ball goes to the free throw line, Killian O'Connor puts it over, it's a level game. Like, they recognise the gaps that are there too. And so there's not a shot clock. So, like, even how these teams have evolved, I was watching the 2013 final there between Dublin and Mayo, and how the teams respect possession so much more now. You were saying, God, they were giving it away fairly cheaply in a way that they weren't by the 2017 final. And that's just, you know, they've tapped into the likes of Jason and Mark, you know, more. And, you know, so the basketball influence has become all the more pervasive.
Yeah. What are the, away from the tactics and stuff, Mark, what are the individual skills you think a Gaelic footballer can take from basketball, or what that he can develop and hone by either playing basketball or integrating basketball drills into a session?
The first main one for me is that, you know, basketball is played on a rectangle, you know, so is GAA, you know, a much bigger rectangle now, you know, than a basketball court. But I think the decision making in short space, you know, everybody talks about this, you know, it's a thing that, you know, I did an awful lot when I was a kid, was playing, you know, soccer 1v1 versus my uncle. You know, his uncle was a League of Ireland player and, you know, highly regarded to go to England and stuff, and just wasn't for him. But himself and his older brother played 2v2 in a backyard. You know, the yard, no more than, you know, 8 yards by 4 yards. You know, we learned to play 1-2s and we learned to hold people off and all that type of stuff. But I think the short side of the game, you know, is what helps the Gaelic player. You know what I mean? And, you know, you probably see that with the Dubs an awful lot. You know, there wouldn't be that many full pitch practice sessions, you know, because it is about making a decision, particularly if you're going against a zonal defence. There's not as much room, you know. And these guys are big, you know. Like, the Dubs are in amazing shape, you know. It's one thing, you know, looking at them on the pitch, another thing sitting beside them in the dressing room. They're in fantastic shape, you know. There's not a bit of waste at all, you know, certainly by the time that they come to the bigger games in the season, you know, and they're long and they're strong. And so you've got to be able to make passes, you know, and you've got to be able to pick people out, you know. And if you're head down and you don't have your head up, you know, there's another thing, head up, eyes up. You have to play sport with your eyes up. You know, you can't just put your head down and go. I'd say, you know, if you go back, you know, watching, you know, they talk about the great Dublin and Meath Leinster championship game where it went to 4 replays. I watched one of them one night. I couldn't believe how much they gave the ball away. You know, just kicking it like 50, 60 yards, and then Meath would get a kick it back to Dublin. Yeah. Dublin would get a kick it back. Yeah, there was some good stuff and some great skills. But, you know, possession became key. And certainly the last 2 or 3 years, I'd say Dublin or more, you know, certainly weren't going to be as loose with possession or as flamboyant a game. The game kind of changed as the nearer the 5 in a row became, you know, possible, you know. So I think it evolves, and then, you know, Kieran Kilkenny becoming a playmaker, which is well documented. So it's not like I'm speaking out of turn, Jim. Yeah. You know, so, you know, and Darren McConnelly further up the pitch. Like, I think it's important in any sport that you have, you know, you have your best players on the ball in the key areas. I think that type of thing is huge. So, you know, they're the type of things I think that, you know, you can bring to the game, the Gaelic game, you know, from basketball. And all those scenarios, as Kieran mentioned, you know, the shot clock. Jim wouldn't have been fond of the professional foul. You know, he wouldn't. He'd rather play the game in the right way. But the evidence, the evidence is on the camera, as they say. You know, the players themselves, you know, are more aware of. Oh, hold on. Yeah. You know,
the last 2 minutes of an All Ireland final.
Last 2 minutes means the last 10 minutes, which is probably the reason that GAA such switched to the clock going down. You know, clock going down. Right, we add on 2 minutes. And then it goes down. And then that's it. Then there's no dispute. Yeah. You're not waiting for, you know, like even sometimes when Dublin, you'd be watching the final or whatever, and they kick a point to go one up. You're going, how long is this ref going to give the other team now a chance to score? Or vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, a friend of mine says, Asher, they're just waiting for the draw. You know, you know, there's a bit of an element in that. But I think, you know, that's probably what makes basketball so exciting, that it can come down to one shot with, you know, 3-4 seconds. And you certainly would not be taking that shot with 20 seconds to go to give the opposition another chance to score.
Kieran, we
have scenarios there with a 2-for-1, you know, with like this, you know, whatever, 28 seconds to go. So we take a quick shot, then we play defense, and then we get the ball back and we get another shot. But we've also now got the 3-for-2. You know, so you add on more. So I said, right, I can get 3 possessions here. You know, now do I take a chance, go for a 3-pointer or a 2-pointer or a 1, you know, or do I need a goal in Gaelic with, we're down 3, You know, yeah. There's 2 minutes to go. Literally 2 minutes in extra time. What are we going to do? Because you know what the other team are going to do? 15 men back into the box. Yeah. You know, so how are you going to break that down? You're probably not.
Yeah.
You're probably hitting and hoping.
Kieran, you've written about this a fair bit in your time, like what you know, what GAA could do, what the sport of Gaelic football as opposed to teams can take from basketball. So are you an advocate of going to such extreme levels as a shot clock, or would you be happy with a countdown and a hooter for the game clock?
The thing about a sport like basketball and rugby is, let's say there was a game there was controversy about the clock. Was it when Clifford got the equalising point and Dean Rock, you know, nodded, like, fair play to you. But there was a bit of argy-bargy throughout the end of that game, or, you know, you had it in the Club All-Ireland final there between Kilcoo and Cara Finn. Like, you know, I could understand why the referees added injury time, because there was play acting going on where the clock actually does not stop. Whereas in rugby have got it just right with a kind of, you know, where the clock stops now,
get to the red.
Yeah, it goes into the red. There's that. Whereas in Gaelic football, so if you're like Cara Finn would have at the end of that game, would have done blatant fouls, taken the time. You know, the referee, they know the referee has to technically book them. That eats into time that's not added on. So if it's only 3 minutes, that's all you're going to get if you do a clock down. So I think that. Whereas the current system allows for a certain discrepancy to the referee. But if you were to stop the clock when that crap is going on, and again, where I would do it with the basketball is, yeah, there should be a black spot instead of a black ball. And it's the equivalent of a free throw where there's a 70% chance where there'll be a score. That's where, and you also maybe get possession. If you are fouled 35 yards out, you know, like when there's an intentional foul in basketball, you know, someone goes to the free throw line, takes the one or two shots, and they get possession at the halfway line. I think things like that would just get rid of... Gaelic football has made huge strides in getting rid of its cynicism, but there are still gaps that will be exploited. And basketball is a sport where we can learn from on that. I know that people will say there's fouling at the end of basketball that's intentional and tactical, but skill wins out. If you've got a free throw shooter, so if Mark is six up, and the other team are trying to foul, well, Mark's going to get the ball to his best. But Sarah Woods, 75% free throw shooter, you know, Sarah's going to punish you. Skill will punish you. Whereas in Gaelic, they don't get the opportunity for skill to punish you. So, you know, there's gaps like that where the teams are ahead of the administrators or the rulemakers. And basketball, it's getting better on that. But I am always amazed that on those things, they don't have more basketball people. I mean, we've touched on the obvious ones, but even you take someone like Kevin Walsh, who was with Galway, played on a great Galway team, won All-Irelands with them, made them very competitive again over the last 5 years. Pádraic Joyce has got them playing more attacking. But like Kevin came from, he was an Irish basketball under 15 international, was playing National League basketball at 15, you know, before he concentrated on the Gaelic. But and he had various coaches in from the basketball background as well. So I'm always, why don't we have a Kevin Walsh on some of these rules committees, you know, or a Donaghy, because they know there's things that Donaghy, and he's spoken about, there's things that he knows he can get away with on the Gaelic floor, on the Gaelic pitch, that he can't get away on basketball because the administrators aren't up to it yet.
Mark, we always talk about what basketball has given to Gaelic football or what it could possibly take from basketball. Is there anything from your time with the Dubs, is there anything you took away and brought back to Mercy that, you know, you were able to implement, or anything that you learned from being with the Dubs that has helped your basketball coaching?
Absolutely. It was a huge, like, being, as much as, you know, I'm bringing some ideas, you know, to Jim, or initially the first few years, maybe with, you know, on the team, on the actual pitch, you know, I learned a huge amount, you know, just first of all, the amount of people that are involved in an organization like the Dubs, you know, like you've 35 to 37 players kind of on the roster, you know, and the way that things are done, you know, now, I would obviously, you know, like a practice sheet would come out, you know, I mightn't agree with everything that would be on the practice sheet, you know, but that's just me. You know, I'm going like, even from my season, I'd be going, okay, you know, it's not unlike the Gaelic season, the basketball, is it? Because you know it's going to come down to two or three teams, Kieran, yeah? Mm-hmm. Like, we know, you know, it's going to be DCU Mersey, Glanmire, Liffey, Celtics, you know, and maybe one other, you know, depending on the players that they have. And you're getting ready for it. And then you're building up in the season to get ready for the last few games. Now, the league has gone a little bit differently this year because it's a straight-out league rather than playoffs. But you've kind of got a mini-league in the middle because you're getting ready for the Cup. Mm-hmm. You're trying to peak for that, you know. And that's not unlike, you know, the Super Eights and then the semi-finals and the final, where you have the top eight teams and Dublin are going to be playing Kerry or they're going to be playing Mayo, you know. You know, or go, you know, whoever is, else is in the mix. So they're in their heads, the players and probably the management, even though they'll approach every game one by one, everyone knows you're getting ready for the bigger games, you know, and that's the way you kind of you prepare your season, you know. Yeah. So it was good to see, you know, good to see the whole organization and the way they do things and the way Jim does things, you know. And might not always be the way I do things, but I can go, yeah, I can write that down. I like that. I don't like that, you know. You know, even the nutrition, they're way ahead in the nutrition. I think they're way ahead in some areas. I think, you know, any coach, they used to say John Wooden could watch an American football game from the corner. And I like to watch a basketball game from the corner. I like to watch a Gaelic game from the corner. It's where you can see the speed. You can see the angles. You know, where, you know, if you're in the middle, you're going up and down like this. If you're behind the goal, you don't really see what's 130 meters away. Yeah. You know, you kind of lose the detail. Even with the Sunday game, you lose a lot of detail, you know, what's off the ball. Yeah. Like, to me, going to a Gaelic game, going up high in Croke Park, where I can see the movement, I'd see what they're trying to do, I'd see what the other team are trying to negate. You know, so that to me is the best, you know, because coaches see things in lines. And certainly, like, if I'm, you know, contributing after the game, you know, Jim goes, like, what you think, Mark? Well, I had a bird's eye view. This is what I saw. And even with all the videos, you might miss that, but you can see it live. You know, like, movement off the ball is huge.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you were talking about Bernard Brogan there. I had Alan Brogan come up to me one time and he said to me, show me how to get free in basketball. I showed him just a little pivot move that, you know, we pivot into the guy before we go to run, you know. And I was involved with the Dublin ladies last year. And that's the type of thing, you know, rather than sprinting, you know, 50 yards to get the ball, why not just get free,
pop,
and then you're open? Like, in my opinion, because I coached against Kieran Donaghy, you know, with the Colester team when Tralee, you know, had a very good team with the three Americans. And, you know, but I think Kieran became probably a better Gaelic player because of the basketball and became a better I think the latest version of Kieran Donaghy as a basketball player, much better than the earlier version, even though the early version was much more athletic, you know, and could jump. And he was obviously in love with Jordan and he could dunk and, you know, he had the attitude of, you know, those guys. You know, I'm sure he's watching this, so I'll tell him a little story. When I was coaching against Tralee down in Colester, and Kieran come over to my timeout that I was having, and he put his cup to his ear like this, you know, to hear what was going on. I said, well, Kieran, you wouldn't even understand what I'm talking about. So go back to your own timeout, please. Like, to me, that was a good element of fun in a high-pressure situation, you know. And he probably brought that brassiness as an attitude with him to his centre forward or his full forward position. But to go on record, you know, a couple of Dubs guys were asking me what he was like. And, you know, I told them that story. And, you know, that never bothered me. You know, I knew what he was like, you know, but, you know, I've seen a big difference in him since he's retired now. He's hugely pushing the basketball and he has to be highly commended for that, you know. But the Dubs actually respected him. They might have had tussles with him and face-to-face and tough physical confrontations, but they really respected him, any of the guys from the Dublin team that I spoke to.
Kieran, where would you go along with the idea then, that what Mark says there, that Donaghy came back to basketball a better player? And would you attribute any of that to his Gaelic football career? That
both complement each other, because like the one thing I found with Donaghy, like you take, I was listening to Pat Price did a podcast there recently with Russ Bradbird, who would have coached against Mark, I'd say, in those years. And he actually, it was interesting, Mark, I'm not just saying what is there. He was talking about like he had coached in University of Texas, El Paso, recruited Tim Hardaway, etc. So he thought, like, I'm this American coach coming over to Ireland, sure, you know, these are all just little Lilliputians. And he said, like, he was really struck by the standard of Irish coach, you know, the likes of Joey, who he never beat, even though he won a league. And he mentioned Mark as well. But he has spoken about how Donaghy and Quirk and Tehan were the most competitive people he's ever coached, right? And this guy coached Division I basketball for 15 years. Guys coming out, he was the Chicago recruiter, right? Which is a basketball hotbed. They're from the north side, south side, tough parts of the world, okay? And he said Donaghy had ingrained in him. And there's various reasons for Kieran's phenomenon or his competitiveness. You know, he has spoken about, you know, even being a release from the pressures that were at home. But I've no doubt a lot of it's informed by the physicality of Jay. I find Jay is great for the basketball. Like, I remember when I was playing in Cork, and we were playing a Jay team, basically, that were using basketball as the winter sport. And they beat us up. They were more aggressive than us, you know. Now, could they do some of the moves as slick as we are? No, but you know what? They got stuck in and they beat us on heart. And I feel that Donaghy brought a bit of that. As Mark says, he brought an awful lot of athleticism in his earlier incarnation. But he brought his spikiness from the GA. And then when he's come back in the Warriors mode, it goes back to what we were saying even about Jordan. He's just so much smarter. You know, Kieran's happy to get... He's nearly more like Rodman, where Kieran's stat sheet is typically now 6 points, maybe 5 assists. He's more creative than Rodman, but, you know, he's a monster on the boards for a small man, relatively speaking, in basketball terms. You know, like, he's 6'5", you know, but, like, he's the leading rebounder in the Irish League, scoring, like, you know, in the Ray Smith era, Ray Smith and Bob Stevens were leading the rebound count and scoring 28, 30 points. Like, Kieran's only scoring 6 points since he came back. But he has those smarts going back to... But, you know, there's no doubt, like, that the Gaelic helps the basketball. I find, like, I'm back coaching the sport for the first time in 15, 20 years now, and the girls who play GAA, I find bring a spikiness, you know, on defense in particular. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the men's game, and Mark was talking about his work with Mix and, you know, with the current Dublin ladies. Like, I remember interviewing Sinead Goldrick, was a fantastic underage
She's a lot of bad. She played with Scott. Yeah.
You know, there's, I suppose, one thing I suppose from, and you know, like Mark, I love both sports. It just is a bit sad sometimes, I find, where, because I suppose it doesn't have the same support, is that when it comes to a decision, I don't know, Mark, how you find this, but as long as they're playing some sport is obviously the main thing, but like basketball does tend to, it produces great athletes, both for its own sport, but particularly for other sports, when, you know, some of those players, probably their first love was basketball, but they haven't had the same support, you know, like Mark is the top, one of the top coaches in the country. You know, did you feel at all a bit sad when, or were you happy for, let's say, when Lindsay and Aoife went over to rugby, or was it, there is an element of fair play, or is it just, is there a bit of God as a sport where we're losing out? We shouldn't be letting...
Well, I stand to be corrected on this, right? Mm-hmm. But from Buddy O'Callaghan in, you know, in Killarney, telling me that they used to run a town league in Kerry back in the day, mm-hmm. a basketball town league that all the Gaelic players played, right? Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt saddened then when, you know, the GAA used to be about... like the summer season. And then, I don't know how many years ago, 10 years ago, we say, it became, oh no, it's the league season as well. This is ultra important. You know, I find dealing with coaches in the GAA, because I'm in a girls' school in Loretta Fox Rock, and coach there. And you know, it is a tough battle keeping the kids playing basketball and GAA, or if there's a clash, you know, it's very hard to get, you know, I tend to be, do you know what, if you have a game, go to the game, you know, mm-hmm. go and play your game. If you're a soccer player, go play your game, but come back to the basketball. Well, I think we have to be like that. Now, mm-hmm. it's a little bit sad and that they're not allowed to play the both, you know. Yeah. It probably comes down to the maybe the GAA coach going, you know, look, we're getting ready for the Fela, or we're getting ready for a championship. And that's when I come back to Kerry. I don't know, do they play as much basketball, the Kerry men, now as they used to?
Well, you know? Well, like, I mean, Kerry have, their games program is ridiculous, you know, the amount of
shit. Probably can't, they haven't the time.
But last, you know, the likes of Declan O'Sullivan was a brilliant player. Declan was finished by 30 by injuries because he was playing from, you know, like the, Kerry have their divisional finals, you know, the South Kerry, the North, they're playing on Christmas week, like, you know. So, like, you know, and then as you said, they're in with the National League if you're a county player, or, you know, they have, they're playing games in early February easily, just the average club player, you know, all the way through. So there is that. And yet Kerry has a very vibrant basketball. But, you know, there was that culture where there was just that bit more time where the Gaelic was off for the average club player, and where they did gravitate to playing basketball, you know. Like, I mean, the tradition in Kerry, like, the Gooch was a very good underage player, you know, or played a bit. He definitely got ideas from basketball between playing a bit himself, along with modelling Pat O'Shea, who we mentioned.
He's a huge fan of still watching it, isn't he? He's a fanatic. He's an NBA fanatic still, isn't he? He loves watching it.
I would, but like Pat played National League basketball for well over a decade. And, you know, that's who the Gooch modelled a lot of his game on. You know, Pat was, played for the Crokes, won on the 92 team, the All-Ireland. But, you know, just on, like, there is that where you sometimes do think, like, when we're talking about children, Mark's attitude is the right attitude, because, you know, where the child comes first, or that the player comes first, you know, that, you know, it going back to the point we were making, that, you know, that his basketball player is better for playing a bit of for Gaelic. And then, you know, at 17, 18, they maybe have to make a decision a bit more. But, like, and there are some coaches that do try and cater for them all. Like, I mean, you have the situation, like, Dana Finn is playing still, was playing an All-Ireland semi-final with Mayo, and still played National League basketball. You know, so there are coaches who make a go of it, but, you know, it just is that, I suppose, it's harder for a sport like basketball to maybe, the really talented kid will, you can understand between limelight or just support, like, where they're going to gravitate maybe more to the football. But, you know, that's why you've got to coach every kid, so that then you'll have your own team down the line, you know, when maybe, you know, the rock star does concentrate on playing the Gaelic.
It's not, I think, I get the feeling I could talk to you all day, and I know you could talk all day, but we're going to have to wrap this up now, I think. I would like to say thank you very much to Mark and to Kieran. It's been a fascinating chat, and I think this is a relationship that's going to continue for some time, so just like to say thank you to you both for joining me, and just to say we will be back next week, and just to flag a couple of things that are going up on RT over the next few days. Obviously, we'll have plenty of news and features on the RT website and News Now app. Sunday Sport this week, 2:00, Radio 1 will feature 1998 All-Ireland winning speech of Hubert Rigney, interview with Liam Cahill, the Waterford hurling manager, where he delves into his own playing career with Tip. And the second part is the Micheál O'Hare documentary. And then on the Sunday game, there's going to be a focus on clubs and whether the July 20th opening day is putting them under pressure. That will be a chat with Colm O'Rourke, Dick Clerkin and Tony O'Regan. We'll look at the ghost goal, Tipperary's goal against Waterford 2018 with Derek McGrath and Dan Shanahan. And Keane O'Neill will revisit Newbridge or Nowhere, which we all definitely need to do right now. So I'll just leave it at that and say thank you very much. Please subscribe. Please have a look at us on YouTube if that's the way you want to look at us. And we will see you all again next week. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. There's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned
earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it, it's over the bar.